This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Don't miss your window of opportunity. Upgrade your space now during Blinds.com's anniversary sale and save up to 50% site-wide. Blinds.com. Elevate your windows with the number one online retailer of custom window treatments. Blinds.com offers hundreds of premium window treatment options. Choose from woven wood and Roman shades to blinds, motorized shades, and more. All designed to fit your budget without sacrificing quality. Blinds.com brings the showroom to you with free virtual consultations and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Our design experts can help schedule a professional measure and installation, plus guidance for DIYers too. Blinds.com has been trusted for 29 years, earning thousands of five-star reviews. Shop with confidence, knowing you'll get upfront pricing, no hidden fees, and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. But hurry, these savings won't last. Shop Blinds.com's anniversary sale happening right now for up to 50% off site-wide. Save up to 50% site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. DJ S on KMOX. Happy Monday. Wheels, good to see you.
Good to be seen. I got a little energy.
I can barely see you.
He's like, I got to peek around the corner.
Yeah, I got to look through all these ring lights.
We got ring lights and monitors and everything. Yeah.
We're fancy.
Plus, I'm short.
You're not that short.
No.
Yeah. No.
That's okay. I'm fine with it.
You're not that short. You're just wide.
Well, I give off the appearance.
Yeah, it's like horizontal stripes on a shirt. You know?
See, I tend to judge it by that when I stand next to other people, I have to look up to see their face. That's kind of how I judge it. What do you think, Ron? Is that a pretty fair judge?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think if you laid on your side, are you as tall as if you were standing?
On the side?
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
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 I think you're
probably
adorable.
Closer than you think. I think it's really weird to say this, but I mean it. I think Kevin is just really, really cute.
Oh, you're adorable.
Yeah, he is. Look at him.
That's good. I like that.
Just the whole thing.
You guys and my wife are the only ones. Well, my mom.
That's all you need.
That. My mom probably.
Who needs
that
more
too.
Than that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Jake is first one in, along with Jamie. You can stream us live at Facebook and on YouTube. Take part in the show. Comment on what we're saying. Give us a direction if you would like. Please, God, give us a direction if you'd like. That would be really nice, especially in the 3 o'clock hour. That's when I bonk a little bit. Man, I know we every time one of us has an interaction with customer service, we bitch. So it's my turn. But this one just really everyone's been through this. So I bought a new vehicle and I financed it. I'm not going to say through who, but it rhymes with GM Financial. And so my first payment was due February 21st. Went online. I made it. I gave them my bank numbers. They sent back a confirmation and a confirmation number, and I put it behind me. Then I started getting email saying, we haven't got your payment yet. Well, that I used to have terrible credit. Now I have good credit, so that really freaks me out.
Right.
So I call the number today, and it's, hi, I'm Angela, your virtual assistant. Great. So I start sounding like a crazy person, responding to everything she's saying with person, need to talk to a person, representative, and I'm talking like that. I'm talking like representative, please. And at some point when she said, tell me in your own words, what's going on? And so I try to make it as robot friendly as I can. I'm like, I made a payment and you don't see it. And she's like, payments, I can help you with that. You owe X amount of dollars and it's 8 days overdue. And so I'm hitting buttons over and over again. And she's like, okay, we'll get you to a representative. And then it goes straight to, office hours are 9 a.m. because this is like 7 in the morning when I got the email. Like, office hours are this, 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 and this. It's just, it's 2025. How can customer service be so much worse in 2025 than it was in 1975? It's crazy.
Well,
it's crazy.
Because they don't want to spend on, you know, the manpower. They don't want to spend on people who will work. And they don't want to spend on people here who will work. So they will do it as cheaply as possible, which also means they'll automate everything they can automate so that you don't have to talk to another person, or they hope that you won't keep trying to talk to a human being. It saves them money. And I feel like everything most companies do is to cut corners and save as much money as possible. And customer service is one of the areas they go to first.
Hey, got a CEO pay has to go up, man.
Has to.
I mean, has to. So
is anyone thinking at the C-suite level or above? Does anyone think, is this truly the best thing for the health of our company? Just having the bottom line work? Because I don't know, maybe I'm just too soft, but it doesn't seem like that should be the only criteria. Like, are my people happy? Are they well taken care of? Because if not, they're not going to be productive. Maybe they're just kind of faking what they're doing. Maybe these numbers aren't even real. And then to finish the story, I finally got to a person and it took like 2 minutes. She's like, I see what happened. Your bank said no. I said, okay. What's your routing number? Gave it to her and she goes, that's it. We're missing a number. So I simply entered the wrong number. Okay. I didn't know that you could send me a confirmation if I got it wrong.
Right.
So then I gave her the right one. She's like, okay, we're all good. Fine. It took 2 minutes. 2 minutes between human beings.
Yep.
And I just worry that on the larger scale of this, once AI truly kicks in, that it may be almost impossible to find a human being in everything we do.
What if the AI, though, can actually do what they did right there and you don't have to have wait at all?
I'd be okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want my fellow human to suffer because they don't have a job.
Right.
But if they're okay, if the AI could have done what Nancy did, I'm okay.
I mean, I'm pretty concerned that the artificial intelligence won't have the intuition that a human would and be able to understand what you're getting at. Even like, let's say you have an issue and you're not explaining it in the exact verbiage they can understand, that I don't know artificial intelligence will be able to say, I know what you mean. You don't mean what you're saying, you mean this.
Right.
And then you go, yeah, that's it. I don't know that AI would be able to do that. Maybe it will, but I'm
sure,
not
but
confident.
You would think it would, that if you like, so as this example, when you call in, a lot of times they'll make you put in your social or your account number or whatever so they can look up your account information first. Well, if that's the first thing that goes in there and you get on there and it can say immediately without you even asking a question, hey, here's the problem with your account. This is not processing. We just need this. And you're like, boom, problem solved. Ideally, that would be the workaround for that. But sure. Even so, I think it's fascinating the way you put the question, Dave, was should the profit motive be the only thing that matters? Because it is.
Well, if you're,
I mean, for 30 or 40 years, we have set the system so that is all that matters. It's all that executives get graded on is stock price and eternal growth. And I don't know where we all live in this world where eternal growth is a thing. Because sometimes you're not going to grow. Sometimes making the same amount of profit you made the year before is going to happen. That's not a failure. You're still in the black. That would seem to be good. But again, we don't treat it that way. We have incentivized and treated it like that is the only excuse. And if your answer to a question is, it's just business, man, got to please the stockholders, that covers everything you do. Doesn't matter what it does to people. It doesn't matter what it does to an industry. That's an answer that gets you off the hook.
Yeah, I think what's unfortunate is that for a lot of companies like that that do sell stocks, it's not good enough to grow. You have to grow by a certain amount every year.
Right.
It has to be exponential.
So a down year is that your profit didn't grow at the projected rate.
Right.
You're still in the black. It still grew, but it didn't meet expectations. Therefore, we need to cut back. That happens a lot. It happens a lot in sports. It happens a lot in the automotive industry. It happens a lot in just business.
Yeah.
And I forget who he was. God, there was a really, really bright guy. I think he was given a TED talk about this subject. And he's like, we've made it so that, and this guy is like super rich guy. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He's a business guy. He's not just some rando commie pinko arguing for the work and stuff. And he was making the point, though, that he's wondering whether this is sustainable forever, right? Because he wants it to continue. But if we continue down this path, it could become problematic the more you push it. And his question was, what do we think about the balance of trading meeting projections versus how we treat human beings? So 500 people lose their jobs because your projections were wrong. You projected 10% growth. You grew at 5%. So we're going to get rid of 500 people to make up that difference, so we do end up where we need to be. He was raising it. I thought he made a really interesting point. He did a better job of explaining it than I did. But his question was not about wanting it to be a different system, because he loves the system the way it is. He's really rich, and he made a lot of money doing it. But he's wondering how it can be sustainable if we're going to continuously sacrifice the good of human beings to make sure that projections are met, as opposed to bills are paid and there's money left at the end.
Yeah. While we're talking about corporate things, this one kind of dovetails in. Have you guys heard about task masking?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So for those of you out there in the audience, this is another example of Gen Z thinking they invented everything. And task masking is what we used to call being lazy. It's what we used to call gold bricking, when you would pretend to do your job, but not really do all of it. And mine goes all the way back to the jump with Mr. Donut. And I have been task masking forever. And it just pisses me off that Gen Z now is like, they just give it a fancy name and think that they've invented every friggin' thing, including being lazy at your job.
Wait, what's the jump? I know Mr. Donut. I don't know those words together.
From the jump means
from the
beginning.
Jump. The beginning.
Oh, from the jump. Oh, sorry. I thought you jumped at Mr. Donut.
No.
Just grab the lever on the train and just pull it all the way towards you.
Right at Mr. Donut.
I thought maybe you were jumping at Mr. Donut. Okay.
Just grab that brake lever and pull as hard as you can. Really grind it to a halt.
It was so literal in my mind.
Once I met that gentleman, I just jumped at him.
Look how busy he is. He has been jumping.
I know you're made of crueler, but...
Yes.
Now, I was going to go even back before that when I worked on the farms, but I did a good job on the farms.
Well, it's kind of hard to hide when you're doing manual labor.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know.
Is Mr. Donut not manual labor?
It was enough cerebral that I could fake it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, what was a brainy task that you faked at Mr. Donut?
Oh, it's a good question. Projecting how many donuts we would need and saying, like, well, if I made the proper amount, I'd be here till 3 p.m. and not get to go swimming at my girlfriend's house. I bet we could probably do with 500 dozen, and therefore, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or here's the best example. This is the best example. So back then I made $2.87 an hour. That was minimum wage. And I would have two or three shifts in the evening to go in and clean. And they gave you 4 hours. You could spend 4 hours there cleaning. But I didn't get it, and I just wanted to get in and out. So I would be done in like an hour and do a terrible job. It wasn't clean, but I was out of there in an hour. And my manager tried to, you know, coach me and help me. And finally he called me and he goes, you realize you're making like $3. Like, why are you even working? You can find $3. You can hand in old soda pop bottles. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. So I was just so lazy. Lazy is not the right word. I was so, my priorities were completely on having fun, which when you're 16, that's what it is.
Right.
But I just, like, I didn't see the forest for the trees.
Don't you think a lot of that, when you guys agree, a lot of that has to do with jobs you just don't want to have?
Sure.
Because I've had jobs, you know, like doing maintenance work for a park district. I didn't want to do that job. I just wanted to get a paycheck during the summer between, you know, freshman and sophomore year of college. It wasn't something I cared about. These were just tasks that needed to be done. As opposed to things that you care about, you're much more willing to put in the time and pay attention to detail and, you know, do all of that. And I think that's part of the problem maybe with what Gen Z's experiencing now is, do you think a lot of them are in jobs, this is not what I want to do.
Sure.
But I got to make money, so I got to do this.
Although I think there's a lot of it in the corporate world too. Yeah. I was a big task masker when I was a lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was the easiest place. It took them years to find me.
At a quarter past, a holy note. Take no more. She practiced.
124 at DGS on KMOX. Happy Monday. Man, it sounds like we have some bad weather. You guys follow this as much as I do?
Apparently not, because Amy said something about it. We might get snow again.
What?
Snow and 50-mile-an-hour wind gusts on Wednesday.
And hail, because it's 60, 50, 40,
what
60.
The hail?
Like,
hail no.
There's a 40-degree temperature but it's within 24 hours. Yeah. So
it also says the high is 46 on Wednesday, so maybe that's overnight?
This is not good for my tree-falling anxiety.
Mm-hmm. That very specific, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll get you. You have tree-falling anxiety?
I do. Yeah.
When did that start?
When I thought, what would happen if a tree fell in my house?
Do you know when that happened for the first time?
Well, I live in a tree-y neighborhood, and so trees fall, you know, during storms. Okay. And I just thought, like, oh, that'd be so awful. And it happens. It happens.
Yeah. I know several people.
All the time.
It happened to my parents.
Yeah, it happens. But yeah, that was one of the things that I just like, oh my God. And so something I've never even, because I love the wind. I love like the windy days, you know, 25, 30 mile an hour winds. I'm all about it. But just the thought of, oh, and I asked Dave Murray, who screwed me, because I asked him, what kind of wind does it take to knock a tree down? Thinking he'd say like 85, 90. He goes, so about 40, 45. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it would have to be a really kind of dead tree though, right?
I don't know.
I don't like the wind. I love thunderstorms. Love rain. Love thunderstorms. I don't like wind. Never been a fan of wind.
I only like the wind when it's blowing out.
Is that a baseball thing?
Yeah, it's a baseball
thing. Blowing out. Let's go. Yeah, I think my mom's neighborhood, there was a tree that fell on a house, and everybody was nervous about that. Like, uh-oh.
Well, don't,
because there are a lot of old trees in the neighborhood, and they had one at her house. There was one in the backyard that was pretty questionable, so they got rid of it.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of them, a lot of really huge trees, and the storms come, and you think, oh, God,
this is
the day.
This is when I knew I wasn't rich. When a friend of mine said a tree fell on their employer's home, and to fix the roof was $800,000.
Oh.
And I was like,
what?
Yeah. I'm like, well.
Doesn't sound
that
right.
That seems a really expensive house.
Yes.
It could be two houses. Yeah.
And it was one of those fancy, like, clay.
Oh, stucco? Yeah, yeah. Like the,
Yeah.
The little.
Oh, you mean the shingle, the roof?
Can you imagine 800 grand for your roof?
No. But then again, if I had a $2 million house, I might think that was no big deal.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I would never sleep. Be so worried about that.
Hey, can we just put a tarp over it?
Hold on. How much would your house have to cost to justify an $800,000?
Well, I mean,
roof?
It would have to be several million.
Yeah, it'd be way more
but
than
it could,
$2
million. It also depends on the roof, like Dave's talking about. I mean, yeah. there some of those roofs, yeah, they're expensive to put up. It's not like shingles, or it's just wood.
If an average roof is 10, 20, 25, something like that?
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, it depends on the size of your house, but
10 sounds cheap for a roof.
10, well, but like it's...
I don't know what houses...
Trying to remember, we did a roof
that sounds like
not long after we moved into our house, like within 5 years, because we had a storm damage and we didn't have to pay for it, thankfully. But I don't remember exactly what it was. But we don't have a huge, like,
footprint.
Surface area of the house, right? It's not a huge house. It's bigger because it's got a furnished basement and all that. But it doesn't look... The roof is not a lot of space. Ours would probably be on the lower end. And I want to say it's like... 15?
Rich guy problems.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You?
The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes.
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS 133. One more thing about the corporate world, then I'll let it go. But this morning, or when was it? Was it last night? Yeah, it was last night. I was watching NBC Nightly News, and this was a weird story for them to have, because I always think of the NBC Nightly News being like real news. And Hallie Jackson, is that right, was interviewing the CEO of Chipotle. Mm-hmm. And he had her tasting the new honey chicken. And she's like, oh, my gosh, it's delicious. And I'm like, this is like a Saturday morning thing. Like, right mm-hmm. when some giggle bunny's like tasting your chicken and, oh, it's so good. It's not NBC Nightly News. Anyway, I'm in a bad mood. And but then the CEO, who's your classic just add water white guy with lots of hair with a little bit of gray around his temples. And it just hit me like, CEOs, they're really like their superpower is just saying things authoritatively in a way that you just want to believe it. And a lot of times they're wrong. Most times they're wrong. How many CEOs keep their job for 20 or 30 years? Almost none of them. So at some point they fail, which means at some point the thing they said so authoritatively was just crap. But I believe this guy at Chipotle just because he like looked the way he looked and said it the way he said it. And I really think I know there's much more to that. And you have to have an MBA or a law degree and you have to have a proven track record to some extent. But doesn't it feel to normies like us that that's a whole lot of it is just having that persona?
Well, there's a lot of politician in that job.
Yes.
You have to be.
And it depends on what kind of CEO you're talking about, what kind of company, because there's a lot of CEOs who are really good at their job and they can pick up on trends. They can figure out how to run a company. You know, you can't clock out. Nothing's above their pay grade. They are always clocked in, always working because there's no one else for them to turn to. Hence the phrase like it's lonely at the top. And you could say, well, anybody in their job, every boss. Every email we get, right? Every, you know, whether it's corporate or anyone else in corporate America, you're going to get corporate speak. It's going to be spoken in all superlatives and with authority. That's just, you know, that's part corporate America. And you could say, well, they only keep their jobs for a few years. Okay, so do baseball managers. So does a football coach. Yeah. So, I mean, anytime you're in a position of leadership, because the buck stops with you and there's no one else to blame, you're going to lose your job. But I think there are a lot of talented CEOs, a lot of talented CEOs who have worked their way up the ranks. And it's just like any other position where you're going to have good apples and you're going to have bad apples. And you're going to have really talented apples and you're going to have apples that maybe, okay, maybe that person fell up. But there are a lot of... I have been in positions where, you know, even like you work retail, right? And you're like, well, I don't want to be a manager because I want to be able to say, not my problem. And there are a lot of people who just want to say, not my problem. Like, I like where I'm at. I like what I'm making. I like what it takes from me, what it asks from me. And in a lot of cases, you work your way up and the buck stops with you and there's no one to turn to. And you're making decisions and the company rises and falls with you. Plus, there are some good CEOs who don't like having to let people go. I think we hear of the big ones like Chipotle and Netflix, but that's such a small percentage of actual CEOs running the companies that help power our country. So, yeah, I guess I feel like I don't have any animosity in general towards the position of CEO because somebody's got to want to do it. And we always tell people, like, you know, keep pushing, keep trying to succeed, try to get promoted. But somehow, once people get to the top, we suddenly turn on them as if they haven't worked as hard.
Well, I mean, yeah, their conduct sometimes is what leads
some,
to that.
Yeah, but I think you also, I think you see a lot of the bad ones when there are a lot of good ones.
I think the difference is we're talking about larger companies. Chipotle is a huge company. And I think the difference is if you do make it to that level and you do have shareholders, the job... by virtue of the job being what it is, I don't think you can necessarily be good to people because of what we were talking about earlier. Because if your number one goal is to make sure the stockholders are happy, then that means employees don't matter that much. That means your customers don't matter all that much either. I mean, they do, but to an extent. I remember the last Chipotle CEO who said, oh, I know you guys are upset about your portion size now because it had been getting worse and worse. Anybody who's gone to Chipotle knows that it's worse than it used to be. And he said, well, all you have to do is just ask for more rice or ask for them to put more veggies on it. When the whole point was like they're cutting back on the meat and that's the whole thing, right?
Right.
So he didn't really care about customers in the moment. He cared about making sure the profit was good enough so that stockholders were happy.
Is it really true that the CEO is the one that's where the buck stops? Because I don't know that it is.
I think
most companies have a board. The CEO is hired by the board and answers to the board. And the board is, I almost compare it to, again, stupid sports guy, but it's more like the commissioner of a league when you're the CEO, where you're in charge, but you still have 5 or 8 or 10 people that decide whether you get to keep your job. And yeah, when you go away, you're going to get paid a lot of money to go away, but you still have to answer to those people. And those people are the ones protected from the public light. You are the shield. That's what a commissioner is. That's what Rob Manfred is. That's what Roger Goodell is. The owners are the board. They decide what his job is and how they want him to do it. And again, you're right. It depends on the structure. The smaller the company, maybe the more the CEO owns, especially if it's the CEO that started the company, right? But like, it's not always structured that way. And a lot of times what they end up being is essentially the shield for the shareholders and the board members that want very specific things, but they don't want to wear the heat for it.
Yeah, but I guess I think, you know, speaking authoritatively and then losing your job doesn't mean you're full of it, because I think when you are a leader to a point, that's what leaders do. You got to speak authoritatively. I mean, you just have to. You can't be ambivalent. You can't be hesitant. And then, like Wheeler said, if he loses his job, that could be, you know, the board members, the shareholders, whoever. And probably too, depending when you're talking about giant companies and CEOs who are brought in for a specific reason, they might have an expiration date depending on the time and the challenges that they're facing. And that, like a Chipotle or Starbucks CEO facing a tumultuous, changing times, post-COVID world, that CEO and his job or her job is going to look different than a company that's by no means small. It could still be a billion-dollar company, multi-billion-dollar company or whatever, where that person may have worked their way up through the ranks. I just think it's kind of like, again, I always fall back on human nature, but human nature is broken and people are stupid, and you're going to find stupid, bad people in the lowest paying ranks, and you're going to find stupid, bad people in high paying ranks.
And I agree with that. So then we should not idolize people who get to that level just because they're there.
And there's a difference
just because
between
you're
idolizing
a CEO
and respecting.
Doesn't mean, yeah, well, I mean, I don't respect them any more than somebody who works their ass off 50 right. hours a week and is at the lowest level. They're not better.
It's a different
just because
skill
they're
set.
In a CEO.
Yeah. We can recognize that without having to call them sir. I don't have any need for anybody in any position of authority that requires you to call them by a title like that. I mean, I've had nothing but bosses that I've worked for that have all said, call me by my first name.
Was the Chipotle guy requesting to be called?
No, I'm saying that this is when we're talking about leadership and all that. Leadership isn't just being decisive. How hard is it to be decisive when you know you've got a golden parachute if you screw up? Where's the risk?
It is
for you?
One of the only jobs that if you royally mess up, you still get to leave with millions.
Yeah, I mean,
depending on the company that you're running.
And again, again, every one of them is different. We all understand that because there's so many businesses.
Yeah. But well, I also it's not the only job. Like, if you could be a baseball player, could royally screw up or get hurt, and he's still signed a contract and he got millions. That's what I mean. It's not the only job with
right,
the parachute.
But he doesn't
and
just
some
get paid
care.
To
some...
go say
you
words.
Can't, really
they got to do something.
That.
They have to actually have to complete the act.
Yeah.
To and perform for people like a musician would or an actor would, and it's a different thing than just being the one that tells everyone else what to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I always look at things case by case because I have a hard time demonizing positions, and I do think America's kind of weird where it's like seek your dreams, pursue your dreams, go for success, and then if you get it, all of a sudden you're put in this category of elites who don't count. And I just think that you do have to go to a case-by-case basis, and there are a lot of things, whether it's running a company or, like you said, being a steel worker or being in the military like General Hertling or to whatever it is, you don't know it until you do it. And there are a lot of things that are way harder than they look, or you think, wow, you think the pay is everything, and that's not it. I know, you know, a friend
of mine. What's been generally true for the last 20 or 30 years about the CEO class?
Those are the big CEOs. But kind of going to like to Dave's point about like being a lawyer, like you could make a ton of money being a lawyer, but that lifestyle, if you never clock out and you're coming in and you're working on Sundays, that might not be worth it to some people, but it is to others. And that's why, again, it depends on the company, it depends on the job, it depends on the CEO. Sometimes people like having a 9-to-5, and other times people like, I want to never clock out of my job, and I'm going to take the responsibility for being at the helm of this ship. I'm just saying it depends on a case-by-case basis.
No, I agree, but what people experience is not case-by-case. What human beings experience is what is generally happening to the most number of people. So again, what's the difference in the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years between the CEO class and the working class? How has that changed over that time period?
With the CEOs making more?
The gap has nonstop grown.
Big companies, yes.
Right. But that's what human beings experience. So when you're talking about why people look at a certain class, especially at the top end, the reason is because that trend is they're pulling further and further apart. Maybe it is, not maybe, a good bit of it is weighted at the very top. But not all of it. And I think you're totally right. There are plenty of great CEOs who do the job perfectly well. They care about their workers. And that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the ones who run the biggest companies that employ the most people and therefore impact the most people. And that's what makes people angry, is that they see a guy that looks like Gavin Newsom. And they hear all the pretty politics words and they hear all the rah-rah stuff, but they don't see the benefit to them. But they do see that you've got a $35 million parachute, so that even if you screw up and put your company in bankruptcy, you're getting paid. And I do think the average person looks at that with resentment, and I understand that.
Every life must be end. 150 DGS on KMOX. So catch us up on Baseball Wheels.
Well, what part of it would you like to get to? Just early spring training returns, yeah. Things along those lines. I mean, obviously,
standouts, disappointments.
The big thing that everybody's buzzing about is that the Cardinals offense has sucked for the first 9 games of spring training. And we spent a lot of time on Gas House Gang today, and I spent way too much time last night. I spent almost 3 hours last night digging into, like, StatCast data and going back and looking at every game and seeing who's swinging at what pitches and why are they struggling the way that they are. Because people try to draw meaning from these things, and you can't. The team has played 9 games. The players have all played about half of those. Are we really going to judge the kind of season we think someone's going to have based on 5 games? Because that's what we're doing. You know, it's just a vast overreaction, but it's what we do this time of year, unfortunately, because you don't have anything else to judge. The only thing you're seeing is like, oh, like I brought this up on the Gas House Gang today, part of my great research. So Pedro Páez is obviously going to be on the team. He's 1-for-9. So batting average, he's hitting 111. He's terrible. He's looking awful. He's put 8 out of 9. So he's had 9 at-bats. 8 of his 9 at-bats, he's put the ball in play. One time he struck out. Every ball that he's put into play has been hit 90 miles an hour or more. And they're averaging 96. He's hit 8 balls. Every ball he's hit has been hit hard. He's having a good spring. 1-for-9 means nothing. When you've hit 8 balls hard out of 8 balls in play, you're doing your job. But okay, that's the kind of thing that doesn't translate when you're looking at a small sample.
Let me make this existential, because that's a really interesting point. Do you think that that goes beyond sports? That
yes.
We as humans, kind of to Amy's point, that we make these judgments and these stereotypes, but if we really got down into the numbers, it would be very different?
Yeah, I think so. I think Amy was right. The point Amy's making about CEOs, and it's certainly not everyone, it's 100% true. You would have to look at every one of them, which is what I did last night.
Yeah.
Looking at every guy. All right, Brendan Donovan's 1-for-13. What is it? What do I see? Well, I see that he's hit 7 balls really hard. He's fine. And I might look at somebody else and go, you know, but even then, 4 or 5 games doesn't matter. It's not, it's the worst part about baseball for most people is it's you've got to be patient to evaluate team and player performance. And unfortunately, like in football, you don't have to be as patient. One game matters a lot more. You know, it's not, your reaction to it can be more significant, but it doesn't carry the weight. And we try to analyze baseball the same way we do other things. And it's like comparing sprinters to marathoners. It's not the same thing. You can't do it that way. And I know that's the hard part for everybody, is being patient enough to wait and see. So it's, you know, that's kind of a big topic now. And look, they've been bad offensively. There's no questioning about it, but it's not enough to learn anything from. And just to give you an example on the opposite side. So 2023 sucked, right, for the Cardinals? 73 wins, disastrous year. They had the best record in spring training that year. They were the best team in the Grapefruit League that spring. Spring training results don't mean anything unless you're looking deeper at, oh my God, this pitcher's velocity is down 4 miles an hour. That tells you something. Something's wrong. He's hurt. He's old. Something. He's got his mechanics rejected. It tells you something. But the surface level stuff in spring training doesn't tell you anything, especially now when starters are playing half a game and leaving. You know, maybe you want to judge the last 6, 7, 8 days when it's all major leaguers against major leaguers and they're playing whole games. That's a different ball game back then. Sorry for the pun. So there's that. We talked about Quinn Matthews, who's the Cardinals' top prospect, top pitching prospect. He was the minor league pitcher of the year for Baseball America, so like in all of baseball. He got sent to minor league camp yesterday, and a bunch of fans were really angry about that. And again, it's a similar idea here, is that if you expected him to make the team, you just weren't reading or listening to anybody. Like, that was never the expectation.
Why did he get sent down specifically?
Because this time of spring, innings are getting harder to find, right? So you've got your 5 starters plus McGreevy, Graceffo, Tink Hentz, and even like Matthew Liberatore's throwing a starter's workload, right? You got all these innings, and you have too many innings and too many players and not enough innings, so they have to start reducing that. So they don't want Matthews to lose the innings. So to get the innings, he's got to go to minor league camp, and that's all it is. He wasn't going to make the team. They have 5 starters, and they have 3 guys in front of him in McGreevy, Graceffo, and Tink Hentz, who are on the 40-man and will be at AAA with him, or maybe in the majors. Who knows? But a non-story becomes a story because people just didn't pay attention. It's kind of, there's a bigger thought for you, too. It's kind of what happens every day in the world, right? Like, people that don't pay attention to details or just don't read stuff see a thing and they get mad about it. Like, this was the plan all along. He might have gotten one more appearance if he stuck around.
It's kind of like elections. People don't really pay attention.
It's a lot.
Wait, hold on a second. What's all this? Like, well, this was the plan.
Yeah, it's.
I wish I were more like you. It sounds exhausting, but I'm way more reactionary than you are. You're way more intellectual, and let me dig to the bottom. And I'm more like yelling at the clouds.
Well, I have the reaction that you're talking about, but then my response to that reaction is, all right, am I right to be freaked out about it? Or am I right to be mad about it? Where can I find out?
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.